Welcome to the Eyes on Conservation podcast, episode 134. CEO and founder of ReAgency Science Communication, Jade Lovell, joins us today on this week's episode of the Eyes on Conservation podcast. Jade and her team host the YouTube series PsyQ, where they try and bridge the gap between science and the public by making their content engaging, informative, and relatable. Their belief in spreading scientific literacy has led them to a partnership with the Young Turks Network and placed their platform on a wider scope, covering politics and hot-button scientific issues, all the while having fun in the process. Take a listen.
My name is Jade Lovell. I'm the CEO and founder of ReAgency Science Communication. We are a science and environment-based PR agency based in New York City, the home of marketing.
Awesome. Very cool. Very cool. So how did you get into science communication? Can we track that back to sort of like its seed here?
Yeah, well, I started my life as not a science communicator, but as a straight-up scientist. I did my undergraduate degree at the Melbourne Neuroscience Institute in Australia, hence the accent. And I worked at Monash Hospital, which is one of the biggest hospitals in my state. But I saw this disparity between the science that I was being taught as a neuroscientist and then the way that science is commonly used by normal people. So, for example, I was studying human brain anatomy, which is one of the coolest things you could possibly hope to study. We got to take human brains from cadavers and slice them up and see what's inside. Like, that was so cool. But the other half of the neuroscience course was these boring 3-hour-long lectures that no one could stay awake for. We have so much science to show that 3-hour lectures just don't work as a communications forum, and yet that's what we did. So it was exciting material being conveyed in this really ineffective way. And I saw it in a hospital setting too. I saw these patients just say, look, you're a parent, you know what it's like to worry about the health of your child. Imagine your child is newly diagnosed with something like leukemia, and they would hand out these information packs to parents. And it's absolutely critical that they understand the intricacies of how the disease works and the risk factors of treatment, the survival rates, the therapy regimes. But I could see that they just didn't understand the information they were being given. And that's really scary for people, especially when you're sick. So what I wanted to do is research into how we communicate and how we can do a better job of getting information to people in the way that they want. So I went and did a Masters of Science Communication on how we get science out there. And what we identified was in almost all cases, people aren't getting the information that they need. And so hence began my career in science communication.
Cool, cool. So most people probably know you best because you are the host of this series on YouTube called PsyIQ. Maybe you can tell us how that happened, how that came to be.
Yeah, we really wanted to practice what we preach, because if we're going to be telling people how to communicate science better, it would help if we had some examples of implementing those best practices. So when I first came to the United States and moved to New York City, I wanted to be in New York because it's kind of the home of where marketing and PR happens, and to have the most influence, this was the city where we wanted to be. But the first thing we did was launch PsyQ with the Young Turks Network, and we wanted it to be a show where we got to discuss science communication issues and the way that science interacts with real people. So trying to humanize things like, you know, the new Anthropocene extinction and how that is caused by humans and the interaction between humans and the environment, but also how policy affects extinction and how by advocating at a political level, we can help save species. So we wanted to launch that show to give us an outlet to get the information out to people in a way that they wanted to, that this was fun and cool and interesting and a little bit different from a lot of conservation reports that are released by research organizations.
Absolutely. And you know, I love that connection. I mean, I think one of the things that you sort of learn, because, you know, I come from, I mean, a similar background in the sense that I started off as a scientist. I mean, in a very different sort of space than you did, as like a wildlife biologist was like my first profession, and then sort of slowly transitioned into, you know, more of a science communicator in the form of like a filmmaker and podcast host, I guess. One of the things that I think I learned while going through that process was how interconnected the field is with everything else, right? And I feel like people say science communication and they think it's like, oh, it's just about science. You're just communicating science to the public. But like, no, you're also like making these connections, right? Yes. And I think it's interesting that you talked about, you know, this show that you host, SciIQ, and, you know, you're talking about like policy and environmental issues. And like, that seems pretty far from like the story you told of like the sort of the inspiration behind like how you got into science communication. So I guess I wonder like what that's like what that process was like for you.
Well, one of the things we wanted to do was bring science and issues like conservation, sustainability to people that wouldn't normally consider themselves interested in those things. So science communication often focuses on like, here's the science, now make a pretty postcard with the science in it. But it often neglects to think about how can we engage the audience. And before becoming a science communicator, I was lucky enough to work at Weber Shandwick, the world's largest PR agency, and I was the director, vice president of digital. So it's the way that I noticed the way that marketers approach communication is completely different from the way scientists approach communication. Scientists go, here's the science, I might abbreviate it a little bit, and then I'm going to put it out there. And it's kind of up to the audience to take that information and do the burden of processing it. Whereas marketers start from the completely opposite direction. They're like, who is my audience and how do they communicate? And they spend a lot of time researching what people are interested in, how we can motivate them at an emotional level, how old they are, where they live, what do they do with their time? And once they know that information, then they match their message to that. So I wanted to, with SciQ, I wanted to find out what people are interested in. So our audience was male and female, but mostly male, around my age. So it's people around 25 to 45. And think, what are the things that these guys are talking about? What's in the news that's targeted to them? What are issues that are important to them? We're part of the Young Turks Network, so we're progressive. So we try and tie in science to topics like Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders or the election or what you can do in Congress or how the choices of the House Committee and Science and Sustainability is affecting the policies that are coming out. So we wanted to really bring those topics to people and then use science as a lens to access them.
Totally. And, you know, you've mentioned that SciIQ, this series that you host, is a part of the Young Turks Network. Maybe you can talk about how that happened, because I think, you know, a lot of people, especially, you know, like our age, are very familiar with the Young Turks, and that for a lot of people, that's like how we get our news, right? How did that happen?
We get a lot of comments saying exactly that, like why are the Young Turks have a science show? So I met one of the we'd launched a science communication YouTube channel. Originally, it was called Did Someone Say Science? It was one of those working titles, so we're like, we'll just call it Did Someone Say Science for now, and then never changed it. Such a weird name, but we started that channel, and then I met a member of the Young Turks. And as soon as they found out we had a science YouTube channel connecting things like politics to science, they said, look, this is something that we really need, because we as, you know, political pundits don't really understand when we read a report or we read a news article that is like, our report finds that chocolate is good for your heart. They don't know how to read that report, and so they just have to trust that the science journalist has done their due diligence and reported it correctly. But they knew that they often got it wrong. I'm sure they got comments saying, like, you've completely misunderstood this research. And they wanted to do a better job, they just didn't know how. So they were interested in bringing in our channel and having a science-based look at these sort of things. And from time to time, they'll invite me onto the main show in LA, and we'll get to talk about, you know, the issue might be something like microdosing or, you know, how we can use DNA techniques to prolong life. And they'll ask me to kind of take it a little bit deeper than a non-scientist could, but still keeping it relevant. You don't want to get a, you know, a 75-year-old PhD on there, because you know, there's some really great 75-year-old PhDs, but some of them tend to have a tendency of getting making it really dry and academic right off the bat. So they wanted someone that could kind of translate the information to a young, youthful, progressive audience.
Gotcha. I just pulled up your YouTube channel. I'm just like looking at all the videos, and like there's so much diversity of like the type of content, you know, just the variety of like issues that you delve into, and like a lot of them are issues that like, I never would have like thought to connect that to like science or to think about that from a scientific perspective, you know. So I guess I just wonder, like, you know, what your process is like. How do you sort of you know, decide what topics you're going to cover on the show?
Yeah, so we do things like the physics behind the movie The Dark Tower, or 10 things that Jurassic World got wrong. But science is all about, science is basically at its core just understanding things better and looking at the world, doing experiments so that we can understand how the world works. So there's science behind literally everything. So what we do is we figure out what are the topics or the questions that we've either received questions from listeners, or we've had questions amongst our production staff. They're not all scientists. So they'll come in and say, like, my water heater's broken. Does that mean I'm going to get electrocuted if I have a shower? I'm like, what a great topic to explore. Or do microwaves give you cancer? Like, that was another one where it got brought into our office, and then we ended up doing a video on it. So it's questions that people ask, but also things that people just... issues that people are interested in, and we'll pick out the issue. So when Donald Trump started running for president, it was so interesting to kind of delve into his psychology. So we wanted to understand, why was this person that by all accounts has no experience in politics, why was he so successful, and why was he so interesting to people? What was the psychology that he was leveraging? And so that was one of our most enjoyed and probably one of our most controversial episodes. We also do things like Uber. Uber's often in the media for its interesting corporate practices. So we did an investigative piece on how they pay their drivers. So just trying to use the scientific method or a data-first approach to breaking down these sort of big issues.
Awesome. Yeah, you know, I mean, you touched on... You've mentioned politics and like policy a couple times, and like how you guys sort of connect that to science issues, or sort of just, you know, view those issues through a different lens on the show. And I mean, it strikes me as like, I mean, especially because you're a part of the Young Turks Network, and like this past presidential cycle, like really, I think connected a lot of people with the Young Turks, just because of the awesome coverage that they had of this just outrageous election that we experienced. I don't know, maybe just like what was that like? I mean, you know, were you hesitant to like dive full force into like political stuff, or I mean, what?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm Australian, so what, after a few months of being in this new country and I'm knowing very little about the political landscape, we got offered this you know, having a science show but on an inherently political news network. So it's been a really big learning curve, and it was really controversial. But I should say a big shout out to the Young Turks and their achievements. They were on election night in 2016. We all remember where we were. And many people were on the Young Turks. An email went out to our internal team congratulating everyone on their hard work, but pointing out that we had more viewers on election night than ABC had. So I think that there's a real desire from the public, particularly in the United States, with this incredible fragmentation of the media, to get their information from trusted sources like this podcast. So people know you, Matt. They know what you stand for and who you are. You're accessible. You're not some celebrity off in a, you know, white tower. And they want to hear what you have to say about something. And they know they trust you, so they trust your information. And I think the Young Turks has really worked on building that trust. And so in the show, we want to do the same thing. I want to be able to say, like, you know me, you know what I stand for as Jade Lovell. We want to bring this issue to your attention. For example, it could be environmental policy that's coming through. If you trust me and you trust my information, then you should act on it. So write to your congressperson. And so we're trying to use the show as a way of engaging particularly young progressive people in the environmental movement, in supporting funding for scientific research, and just making sure that in this country, sustainability and science are protected. And at the moment, this is probably the first time in the history of the United States where it's been this important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm going to ask you a non-science question just because I'm curious. Like, you're from Australia. You got to experience this crazy, like, election cycle that we had in 2016. I guess I'm wondering what that was like, just, you know, sort of viewing that as, I don't know, like, maybe being not as familiar, like, with the political system here in the U.S. I mean, like, or I don't know, just generally, like, your thoughts on...
on American politics, that crazy place that we call American politics.
Yes.
So the election happened in November. In December, I went back to Australia for Christmas. And the one question that everyone asked, you know, have a guess what everyone wanted to know about U.S. politics.
I don't know.
The one question was, what were they thinking? So from outside, I mean, in almost every country outside of the United States, particularly like first world OECD type countries, the person that's in power is usually, I mean, I'm sure they're a politician, but they usually have this kind of thing that we all agree on. So they always rational, no matter whether you agree with their logic or not. They usually have a career in politics, so they have an understanding of how the political system works. And now we have the world's superpower with a leader that defies all of those norms. So Donald Trump was a well-known figure outside of the US, so everyone kind of knew what he stood for around the world. And then to see him voted into as president was very interesting. But people are genuinely now becoming fearful. People are starting to say to me, like, you have to be really careful. Oh, you're going back to New York? You should be really careful because the United States isn't safe. So I think that from an outsider looking in, the presidency is potentially damaging to the reputation of the United States.
Yeah, it's funny. So I had this experience. I was down in Mexico in March for a shoot on this Akita documentary I'm working on. And the response that I got universally from almost everybody that I talked to about, like, political stuff and what was going on in the U.S. was, now you know what it's like. Because yeah. People in Mexico view the president of Mexico, Peña Nieto, in a very similar way to, like, how we view Donald Trump. You know, I mean, his approval ratings are just as low, maybe not quite as low as Trump, but extraordinarily low. He was sort of this celebrity figure, you know, before he became president. It was quite interesting, right? I mean, because you made this comment of, like, well, most people were just sort of like, what were they thinking? But in Mexico, they were like, yeah.
Yeah. This is what it's like. So I was in Mexico in February of this year. And I was talking to a Mexican conservationist, a wonderful guy named Jose Sarocan, who runs an organization called Conabio for the knowledge and use of biodiversity. Incredible organization protecting biodiversity in Mexico. But he's kind of known he tries not to be political. But on his door, he had this, it was quite a radical step for him to do this. He had a cartoon, and it was a job interview, and there's two people in the job interview, the interviewer and the interviewee. The interviewer says, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And the interviewee says, probably climbing a big wall into and escaping into Mexico. I was like, you never know.
I know, right?
Yeah. But I think that this presidency is really interesting because we've had this kind of slow but inevitable attack on the environment, in that we're having less and less public spaces, and the situation seems to be getting worse and worse, particularly around things like climate change. But it's really interesting to hear this administration kind of talking about, well, we only need to save a little bit of the environment, and actually explicitly saying that environment is not a priority here. So I think it's the first time that we've had the leader of the United States be that explicit about their views on conservation. And I think that's really interesting. And it'll be interesting to see what that means for the world in 5-10 years time.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I mean, it puts people like you and myself as well in this interesting situation, right, where we're like, the president of this country where we live is not just, you know, I mean, not only is, his administration expressing those types of opinions that you mentioned about the environment, but also just straight up denying scientific fact, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, that, I think, places an additional burden on science communicators, right?
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden, it's not, you know, there's no nuance to that message anymore. It's just, no, you're wrong. You know, like, well, wait, but this is, do you know how the scientific process works? Like, no, clearly you don't, right? So it's like, well, where do you start, you know? And I mean, I guess, so I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm wondering, like, sort of how you, I mean, do you feel that as, like, a burden, or do you feel, like, additional responsibility, like, because of the political situation we're in?
I think that trust that we were talking about earlier makes a big, it's become more important. So, for example, because certain people trust Fox News, they therefore distrust scientists. They see Fox News journalists every day on television. They feel like they know them. But they don't know the scientists that are writing the IPCC reports. They've never met a climatologist probably in their life. So why should they listen to people they've never met over someone they see every night? And when you look, there's actually really interesting science on this, on science. The science of science communication is compelling, that we build trust with people that we see, that we like, and that are like us. And so it's if we as scientists and people that think that the environment and conservation is important, we then have to make an effort to be human and be like the people that we're trying to speak to. So, for example, if I, as you know, I'm a corporate New York type of gal, if I kind of wander into rural North Dakota and try and tell people how conservation should work, no one's going to listen to me, and rightly so. So the burden is on us as communicators to adapt to the people, the styles, the culture of the organizations that we're trying to meet. And then that trust becomes really important. So I think that's why shows like this and shows like PsyQ are really important. I have a responsibility as a young woman to reach out to other young women and tell them about important scientific issues, and particularly in environment and conservation, because that is so time critical right now. So I can use my position as a young woman to reach out to people that look like me and think like me. And we all have that responsibility to do the same thing where we are and with the community of around us.
Totally, totally. And, you know, we've sort of, like, come back full circle to, like, one of the very first things you started discussing, right, which was, like, you know, how marketers and people who are experts in PR, right, sort of approach an issue or a problem. People like me, people like you, I mean, obviously there's a lot of variation. There's certainly, you know, people that are similar to me in a lot of ways that maybe, you know, don't believe in climate change, right, and need to be convinced that climate change is real. But there's a lot more people that are not like me and not like you that, you know, have those beliefs, right? Right?
Or have, and that's how we have these echo chambers.
I guess I wonder, like, you know, is there, and I mean, this is maybe like a broader question, like about PsyQ, but I mean, also the Young Turks, right? Because I mean, it is, as you said, like it's the audience is very progressive. And I just wonder if there's any attempt to like reach audiences that, you know, don't fit that mold.
Well, I think step one is reaching the audience that we already have. So the Young Turks has, you know, 5 million subscribers. They have quite a large viewership. But we need to make sure that we're using and activating that group for behind the right issues. So power to the Young Turks, because they take a lot of time and energy trying to engage their membership. They have things like Wolfpack trying to get money out of politics. And not just asking their viewers to watch, but to do something about it. We do the same thing on PsyQ. We'll often end the segment, you know, like, now that we've told you this information, what are you going to do about it? Like, here's some things that we'd recommend that you go and do. So engaging people that do look like us and think like me and look like me, I have to not just tell them what's going on, which is what a lot of scientists think, that they think that that's where their job ends. But I would say, no, as a human, you have a responsibility to show appropriate levels of concern about the research findings that you have, not just present it in this cold, facts-only type of way. and which, you know, that's sort of controversial statement within the scientific community. But then to reach people outside of that group, we have to adapt our language. So it could be, you know, Austin and areas around Austin have become some of the first places to be 100% renewable. And that's in Texas. So I know that Austin is a special part of Texas. But they don't necessarily talk about climate change. They'll talk about national security and how energy independence can make us safer and stronger as a nation. Those things like national security are deeply important to generally to Republicans. So by presenting, instead of saying the words climate change, which we know is emotionally loaded, we could rename it something like human-caused climate instability or whatever term works, or just avoid it altogether and talk about issues that do matter to those people. So national security, jobs. I mean, there's a booming green energy sector, and we're missing out on a lot of it. I mean, China is leading research and development. So if we want to encourage United States manufacturing, United States research and development, and keep our leading edge, we should be talking about green jobs.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So my last question, I think, is, you know, just, I mean, your show, SciIQ, and you talked a little bit about your background in science, it's pretty broad, right? I mean, it's sort of like any way that science could sort of be incorporated into people's everyday lives. But I mean, of course, the focus of our show is like pretty specific on conservation, and then science is sort of like one small piece of that, because conservation means lots of different things, right? So I guess I'm just curious of like how you view like environmental and conservation issues, like, I don't know, like within the context of like the broader mission of your show.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was a conservationist before I was a scientist. As a student, I started, as a primary school student, I was like 8 or 9, I started the joint environmental mission at our school. So the environment was something that was always really important to me. And now that's become a really deep part of our work. We work with groups like the Tyler Prize for Environmental Achievement, and groups like the Smithsonian hosted the Earth Optimism Summit this year, talking a lot about how whilst there's a lot of bad news in conservation, there's also a lot of good news as well. So we need to share those good news case studies. So I think my interest and background in conservation and sustainability comes through in our show with the kinds of topics that we choose. We try and keep it varied so that there's something for everyone. But to me, the most urgent issues of our time are around climate change and how we as humans are all going to be able to live together on this earth without, you know, causing each other too much hardship. So for me, climate change is probably the most important thing that I can cover on the show. And we spend a lot of time thinking about what are the biggest issues and how can we engage people around them. So particularly like when the EPA is often, there's this lovely congressman named Lamar Smith in Austin, ironically in Texas, and he is making it his life's mission to help make the EPA's life harder by changing the laws and what data they can use. But that sort of dry policy information directly impacts our ability to conserve the environment and to live sustainably. So we have to make that really kind of dry, boring, like the Honest Act is what it's called, making those laws relevant to people and presenting them in a way that is fun and engaging and looking at it in no matter what issue it is. Like if you're really interested in basketball, I will tell you about climate change through the lens of basketball if that is what works for you. So I think we have to find the right way, because back to the original point, people just aren't getting the information that they need.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that is, I certainly share that view.
But that's why I'm really interested to see your Vaquita film, because I think we as science communicators have a responsibility to use art or use podcasts or use YouTube or use music or whatever it is to bring these issues to people and engage them. So it's this intersection between, you know, we've got to use whatever tools that we've got, because time's running out for the Vaquita and for the planet.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Do you guys have any, like, exciting plans for the show coming up in the near future that you want to share? And then maybe, maybe you can just tell people, like, where they can go to discover the show if they're not familiar with it.
Sure. So we have some really exciting things coming up on PsyQ. You may or may not have heard that our network, the Young Turks, just received $20 million of venture capital funding. So the network is going through a big change. For us on PsyQ, we film outside. We film from YouTube's studios in New York City. And they've just launched this brand new newsroom. So we're going to be bringing, we're going to have PsyQ News, so trying to keep people more up to date with the news of what's happening in the science field. And we're going to be launching a more investigative journalism series. So our videos are usually like 3 to 5 minutes, but sometimes it's not enough to really delve into big issues and tell the full story. So we've got lots of interesting new developments coming up. But if you like science and you think that understanding the science behind life is important, check us out. We're at youtube.com/PsyQ, S-C-I-Q, part of the Young Turks Network.
Awesome. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the show. It's been a lot
of
fun.
Thanks for having me. And keep doing what you're doing, because we need more eyes on conservation.
Awesome. Thanks.
So that was scientist, CEO, and YouTube personality Jade Lovell discussing her YouTube series, PsyQ. If you're not already hooked and Googling where to learn more about the show, I'll lend you a hand. Check them out at youtube.com/PsyQ, that's S-C-I-Q, for more information. And of course, all of the resources described in this episode can be found in the show notes page for this episode, where you can find at wildlensinc.org/EOC134. Thanks for tuning in, and if you enjoyed this episode of the show, please rate, review, and subscribe to the EOC podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. Our theme music is by The Humidors.